Okay, we are, let me share screen. Actually, I need to do this. Sorry, this is what, the stuff that I usually do in advance, but bit pair above. Okay, does everybody see the screen? Yep. Okay.
Yes.
So we are in the middle of this story of moving the Aron from its exile, if you will, or where it's been sort of set aside for the last couple of hundred years since the fall of the Mishkan. No, actually, last 70 years, let's say, since the fall of the Mishkan in beginning of Sefer Shmuel. And we are in Kiryat Yearim. David decides to bring it to Yerushalayim. The big picture question of why David makes that decision now, we haven't addressed. We spent some time last week looking at the context of why it was such a significant event to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim after the fall of Shiloh, after the destruction of the Mishkan, where the Aron went into exile to Eretz Plishtim, came back from Eretz Plishtim, came to Beit Shemesh. There was a terrible tragedy in Beit Shemesh. Eventually, they put it aside, quote unquote, too hot to handle, and they left it covered in a house of Avinadav in Kiryat Yearim. And there it's been sitting through all the days of Shmuel, all the years of Shaul, and now David, as he comes to Yerushalayim, conquers Yerushalayim, is ready to begin to centralize Yerushalayim's role as at the center of the world of Israel. And so part of that would seem to be the decision to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. What to do with it, we haven't decided, but at least to bring it to Yerushalayim. So he places it on a wagon, al-agalah chadasha. We spent some time last week talking about the significance of this phrase, pasuk gimel, which is kind of read almost like a song with a refrain. They put the Aron on a new wagon. They took it, they carried it from the house of Avinadav. Uzzah and Achio, the sons of Avinadav, were driving this new wagon or new cart. They carried it from the house of Avinadav upon the hill. They took this Imaron Elokim, Uzzah and Achio, traveling with the ark. Achio lech lifnei Aron. And then you have this description of David v'chol beit Yisrael mesachakim lifnei Hashem v'chol atzev roshim kinurot nevalim tupim na'anim mitzaltzalim. David and the house of Israel, they were dancing, singing, mesachakim, playing, but playing in a much broader sense. Mesachak in a sense of dancing and singing and celebrating. This was an extraordinary moment. And we really don't appreciate how big a moment this was unless you see it against the backdrop of what we looked at last week, which was the tragedy that had occurred in the days of Shaul, days of Shmuel, where the Aron was taken and 50,000 people were killed in a terrible plague. It was plagued in Aza, in Gat, in Ashdod, plague in Beit Shemesh, and decided to separate the Aron from the Mizbeach and essentially not rebuild the Mishkan. The Mishkan essentially has now been defunct. And the only thing that's functioning is the large altar, the Bama, in Giv'on, and the Aron is in hiding. So imagine for today, if you wanted to put it into context, imagine for a moment if suddenly somebody discovered where the Ark was hiding. We know that the Ark was hidden before the destruction of the first temple, and it's been hidden ever since. It never returned to the second temple. But imagine the celebration that would happen if somebody literally just walked into a tunnel in Israel, opened up, and there it was sitting. And with the luchas intact, everything, right? Just the authentic, and it was, you know, you'd probably go through a period of time as to whether to question whether it was authentic or not. But once it was authenticated, the celebration would be off the charts. That's exactly what you had here. It was only 70 years or so. It wasn't 2,000 years, but nonetheless, the celebration was significant until tragedy struck, and that's where we were up to. Pasuk Vav. They came to place threshing floor of Nachon, wherever that is, not our issue for now. Ishlach Uza el Aron Elokim Vayochezbo. Uza stretched forth his hand to the ark, took hold of it. Ki shamtu avakar, but the oxen stumbled. Vayicha af Hashem b'Uza, vayakehu sham elokim al ashar. God was angry at Uza, smote him al hashal. Unclear what this word al hashal means. It's translated here as smote him for his error. That's based on Rashi's interpretation. Rashi translates al hashal as al hashgaga, the error. Sheyalo lidrosh, I'll talk about the error in a second. I'm going to leave what the error was in a second. There's a parallel verse in Divrei Hayamim, which is a little more specific, and in Divrei Hayamim it says Ve'akeu al Asher Shalach Yado. Instead of saying Al Ashal, it says Asher Shalach Yado. But either way, it comes to the same point that God kills Uza for his mistake of reaching out to the Aron. Vayamot Sham im Aron Elokim. And there he died with the ark. Yicha le David al Asher paratz Hashem peretz b'Uza. God, David was angry because God had breached forth with Uza. Ve'yikra l'makomahu peretz Uza, called the name, even named the place, the breach of Uza, ad hayom hazeh. Ve'yirad David et Hashem b'yomahu v'yomer. David was fearful of God that day, and he said, how can I bring the ark to me in Yerushalayim? Terrible tragedy has occurred. I can't just continue the celebration, business as usual. So he decided not to bring the ark to Ir David. On the other hand, you couldn't just send it back. You couldn't send it back for two reasons. Number one, because you had just removed it from Kiryat Yearim. And number two, because the tragedy was Uza, the son of Avinadav, from whose house the Aron just came. So you can't just send the Aron back to the house, to the Shiva house, where they're sitting Shiva for Uza. So instead, Ve'atero David Beit Oved Edom Hagiti. So he sends it to the house of Oved Edom the Gittite. We don't know a lot about this Oved Edom Hagiti here. In Divrei Hayamim, we are told that he's one, a pretty prominent individual in the house of the Levium. Why he's called Oved Edom, I'm not sure, but he is a Levi, and there he places the Aron for safekeeping. And the Aron will stay there for 3 months. Vayeshev Aron Hashem Beit Oved Edom Hagiti, Shlosha Chodeshim. And after 3 months, Vayevarech Hashem Et Oved Edom Bet Ko Beito. David hears that God had blessed the house of Oved Edom. Ostensibly, David understood that to mean that God wasn't angry for bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim. Whatever his anger was specific to the circumstances that took place. But in fact, you know, once it's there and the house is blessed and realizes that that is a message from God, his house was blessed because of the ark. David, and so David decides, he decides that he's going to bring the ark from the house of Oved Edom, finish the task that had started 3 months ago, and bring it to Yerushalayim. As the people who carried the ark would take six paces or six steps forward, every six steps they would stop, and they would bring sacrifices, ox, and bring different offerings. And another place it says, olot ushlamim, peace offering, burnt offerings, peace offerings. David was dancing before God. We saw before, misachakim, celebration, joy. dancing with all of his strength before God, with David Chagur Ephod Bad, wearing a linen ephod, wearing a linen apron. David, the house of Israel, they brought the ark to Yerushalayim, shouting and blowing the shofar. As the Aaron came to ear David, I'm going to finish the parak, and then we're going to go back, and it's going to take us a few weeks to go through this story. But I want to just finish the whole parak so we have a sense of everything that's happened. Vayaron Hashem ba'ir David, as the ark approached ir David, u'michal bat Shaul nishkafa ba'ad ha'chalon, and Michal, daughter of Shaul, who had returned to David in the previous parak, was watching from the window. V'teret ha'melech David mefazez u'mechaker lifnei Hashem v'tivez lo b'liba. And she looked out and she saw David jumping and leaping and dancing before God. Didn't like what she saw. Displeased her. It says, despised him in her heart. Vativez lo b'liba. She was not happy. Vayaviu et Aron Hashem, vayatzigu oto b'mkomo b'toch ha'ol asher natal lo David. They took the ark, they brought it to Yerushalayim, they placed it in a special tent that David had pitched for it, like a mishkan, miniature. Vayal David olot lifnei Hashem u'shlamim. David brought burnt offerings and peace offerings. And he turned to the people, he blessed them. This is an extraordinary moment. Then he began to distribute food amongst the people, to men and to women, to everybody, a cake of bread, a cake made in a pan, sweet cakes, all kinds of different types of foods available. And every person went home. And that was the end of the story. A little postscript in the chapter, three psukim, which we're not going to get to for a couple of weeks, but we'll read it now anyway. David returned from his moment blessing the people. Michal comes out to greet daughter of Shaul, comes out to greet David. Atomer, ma nichbad hayom melech Yisrael, ashenigla yom lenei ammahot avadav kihigalot niglot achad harekim. How is it that the king of Israel, I'm going to read the translation. How did the king of Israel get him honored today, and covered himself today in the eyes of the handmaids of his servants as one of the vain fellows shamelessly uncovering himself? Meaning, you're dancing around in an apron. To translate this into the vernacular, she said to him, it's pastnished. How inappropriate is this? You are the king of Israel. What happened to dignity? What happened to royalty? What happened to malchus? What happened to statehood? What happened? You're the king, and you're dancing around like a shameless vagabond. Vayomer David al Michal lifnei Hashem asher bachar bi me'avich u'mikol beito litzavot oti lenagid al ha'am Hashem ha'Yisrael v'sichakti lifnei Hashem. David answered before God who chose me above your father and above all of his house, to appoint me as prince of the people of Israel, before God I will rejoice. Unekaloti od mizot, and I will yet be more than this. Ve'iti shafal b'inai, even if I will be base in my own eyes. Ha'imahot asher amarti ma mekaveda, with the handmaids whom you have spoken, with them I will be honored. Meaning, you can decide what you want. Look at me however you want. But my celebration is before God, and I have no consideration for anything else. Michal, daughter of Shaul, had no child until the end of her days. How that verse ends up in this story, there's a lot here to discuss. I am not going to address the Michal question today. You'll just have to come back another week. I want to come back to the story of Uzzah. So I read through the whole parak. You have a whole picture. Again, we're going to break it down. Today I want to start with the question of what did Uzzah do wrong? So coming back to the question, Uzzah saw the oxen stumble, and things began to shake in the wagon. We saw in the previous verse that Uzzah and his brother Achyo, which is an interesting name for a brother, right? Achyo. Achyo means his brother. So Uzzah and his brother is Uzzah and Achyo, but his name is Achyo. So just kind of unclear. Maybe his name is not Achyo. Maybe he was just called Uzzah's brother. That would be pretty, imagine going through life being known as Uzzah's brother. Either as it may, Uzzah and Achyo is in the front, driving the wagon, if you will, and Uzzah is in the back with the ark, protecting it. And Shamtu Abakar, the ox, began to move. And so Uzzah grabbed it. And the question that all the Mefarshim ask, everybody jumps on the question, what did he do wrong? It's a foregone conclusion that if you see something happen to the Aron, you're going to try instinctively to protect it. Now, there are those who say, and just to be fair, there are those who say that it wasn't the Aron that was falling, it was Uzzah who lost his balance as the wagon began to slip, and Uzzah grabbed the Aron to steady himself. There is such an opinion. I don't think it's shot on the parak. I think we're dealing with a much more dramatic moment when he's literally reached out to steady the ark and instantly paid a price. And the question becomes, what did he do wrong? I used the analogy at the end of the shiur last week, which is actually a story that I wasn't actually there in person, but I do know that it actually occurred in my first shtal, my first position in Calgary. I was away for the summer, and I had heard about the story. One Shabbos, they put the Sefer Torah back in the Aron after Torah reading, right before Musaf. And as the Chazan began to say the Kaddish before Musaf, the Sefer Torah that had just been put back in the Aron was obviously not put back in a secure fashion, and it literally rolled out of the Aron and onto the floor in front of the Aron Kodesh, in front of the whole shul. And if you were standing there, nobody was standing there, so they couldn't catch it, but had you been standing there, and you saw the Sefer Torah begin to roll or to fall, it happens all the time with Hagba, right? You're standing on the bimah, the person's doing Hagba, whatever, he loses balance for a little bit, or it's a heavy sefer, and it begins to teeter, and everybody holds their breath for half a second, and the gabayim, naturally, they reach out to grab the amudim, the atzei chayim. They don't worry about grabbing a talus. Normally, we don't touch the sefer Torah unless we have a talus between us and the hands of the sefer. We don't think about it. We just grab the sefer Torah because we don't want it to fall. Who's going to sit there and think about whether you should grab a talus to hold the Aron? The Aron's about to fall. You grab it. It's just instinctive. That's what you do. So this is a bit of a mystery as to what exactly did Uzzah do wrong? So we're going to have to begin by exploring the Mefarshim and see what they say about this, and then we will pick up from there. So we're going to jump to let's do it here. This is the source page. Part of this was on the source page I sent last week. This is actually a new page. I'll send it out by email. But in the meantime, Rashi's comment Vayichraf Hashem Be'uzah Vayakehu Al Hashal. God smote him Al Hashal. What is the Shal? So Rashi translates the Shal as the word Shgaga, mistake. What was the mistake? So Rashi says Sheyalo Lidrosh Kal Vachomer. Uzzah should have understood a simple Kal Vachomer. What's the kavachomer? Nosav nasa bayarden, hu atzmo lo kol sheken. This phrase, Aaron nose et nosav, the Aaron, the ark, carries those who carry her. It's based on a story in the crossing of the Yarden in the days of Yeshua, where as they crossed the Yarden, the pasuk seems to intimate that the Kohanim stood in the middle of the Yarden until everybody passed through. And then the Yarden kind of waters came back and the Kohanim stepped onto dry land. So Mefarshim asked the question, how does the Yarden return and then the Kohanim step on dry land? Gemara says, Aaron Nosef Nosav, that the Aaron literally carries those who carry it. They were carrying the Aaron, but the Aaron literally flew through the air, carrying all the Kohanim and took them over to the other side. So there's this notion in Chazal that the ark carries those, bears those who bear it, carries those who carry it, nose et nosa. Says Rashi, and this is based on a medrash which appears in the Yalkut Shimoni, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Aaron nose et nosav atzmo lo kol sheken. If the Aaron can carry those who carry it, of course it can carry itself, right? Aaron, in other words, can take care of itself. You do not need to worry about the Aaron. You grab the Aaron because you think it's going to fall. You know, we're talking about an object that can wreak havoc on the cities of Gat and Ashkelon and Ashdod and bring about all kinds of plagues because they dared take it into captivity. We're talking about an object which the moment they put it in the Beit Shemesh, if they mistreated it, it can bring about a plague in the city. The Aaron is an object that is almost, it is too hot to handle. It's an extraordinary object. You can't just treat it business as usual. It's falling, you grab it. It's not a business as usual object. And Uzzah, who was driving with the Aaron, who had grown up in the house of Avinadav, where the Aaron was kept for all those years, should have known better. You should have known better. The Aaron carries those who carry it. The Aaron can take care of itself. And therefore, you should not have bothered to grab it. Now, if that's true, there's another problem. If the Aaron is quite capable of handling itself, and therefore, even if the oxen begin to falter, you're not going to grab it because it can steady itself and it can carry those who carry it, and the Aaron is kind of the supernatural object that exists outside of space and time, then it kind of begs the question, what's Uzzah doing riding in the back with the Aaron in the first place? Right? So that we saw in the previous pasuk that Achyo holech lifnei ha'aron. Achyo is in the front and Uzzah is in the back. So what's Uzzah doing in the back if the Aaron is capable of carrying itself? So I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that question, except that maybe that's part of the problem. At the moment Uzzah climbed into the wagon together with the ark to kind of look after it, you knew trouble was brewing because, again, Aaron nosef nosav. The Aaron is quite capable of taking care of itself. Not totally satisfied with this answer for any number of reasons, but the simplest being that I'm not sure the punishment fits the crime. Okay, so the Aaron can carry itself. That was a nace that occurred 400 years ago. Okay, the Aaron, if you mistreat it, can wreak havoc if you abuse it, etc. But nonetheless, you're talking about a Sefer Torah, you're talking about the Luchos. You're not going to just put it into the back of a wagon, sit on top of the oxen and drive and let it go without an honor guard. Right? Uzzah climbed into the back to be the honor guard for the Aaron. That's his job. So even if it was a mistake, I'm not sure it was a mistake that was driven by malice, by disrespect, by an intentional kind of dishonor. Poor guy. He did what he was told to do, protect the Aaron, climb inside, and shalach yado, held it because he thought it was going to fall. and got zapped by lightning. And that's a very difficult pill to swallow. I think it's for that reason that the Radak takes a different approach. In the second interpretation here, the Radak offers two interpretations in source four, and two interpretations. The second interpretation is more or less along the lines of what Rashi said, based on Chazal or Razal, Rabbeinu Zichronam Livracha, Dashu bo ki chet uz ki chata uza be'echoz bo. But the chet of Uza was that he grabbed it. The fisha chashav she'ipol la'aretz, because he thought that the aron was going to fall. And in so doing, he diminished the sanctity of the aron. Right, that gives a little more depth to this interpretation by saying that overall the issue is that he reduces the sanctity, diminishes the sanctity of the aron by perception, as if to say the aron can't stand by itself without somebody to carry it. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. It can carry those who carry it. For sure, it can carry itself. And that is part of the story in Sefer Yeshua. So the second interpretation that the Radak gives is exactly in line with Rashi. He just adds this phrase, Mi'et lefi machshvatom b'kdushat ta'aron. To kind of understand what's going on, he explains that by grabbing it, by getting into the back of the wagon, by grabbing it, by protecting it, he sort of diminishes the perceived sanctity of the Aron itself. It's not just a box like any other box. And it's even not like a Sefer Torah. It's the Aron. And the Aron with the Kruvim and the Mer Kavah and the Shechin on top of it, you can't just treat it as a business as usual kind of item. By the way, you can already see why this parsha or this parak is read as the Haftorah for Parsha Shmini. In the story of the death of Nadav and Avihu, were very similar circumstances. But the Radak offers a different answer. And the first answer is actually, I think, the Radak's preferred answer to the story. He says the following. Va'od. Shezeh, kishe'achazbo, the reason why he was punished for grabbing it, is not because he grabbed it, but because he shouldn't have been there in the first place. Kilon natan ki'im livnei Levi, shehem mekudashim mishar bnei Yisrael. What business has Uza to touch the Aron? The only ones who were allowed to touch the Aron were the Levim or the Kohanim. And Uza and his brother Achyo and their father Abinadab was neither a Kohen nor a Levi. And if you're not a Kohen or a Levi, you're not allowed to touch the Aron. You're not allowed to carry the Aron. Only Levim. Uma shekatav lemala ki Elazar Achyo kidusho lishmor ha'aron. Way back when it says that when they placed the Aron in the house of Abinadab in the days of that story of Beit Shemesh, that Elazar was his brother was designated to guard it, to protect it, doesn't mean to guard it, to physically hold it, to move it. His job was to keep the room in which the Aron was kept, to keep it clean, to sweep the floor. Rabetz is to sweep the floor, to wash down the dirt, to make sure that the room in which the Aron is kept was clean. God forbid it meant to ever touch the Aron. To carry it from place to place? That is the sole jurisdiction of the Levium and the Kohanim. And if you're not a Levi or a Kohen, you have no business touching or being in that context. So with Radak, I'll get to the last phrase in a second, but what Radak is suggesting here is that the chet here is actually much bigger than Uza's. Uza paid a price for a mistake that's much broader than Uzzah. And the broader issue here, says the Radak, is that he's not from the house of Levi. And the Aron could only be carried by the people from the house of Levi or the Kohen. Now, if that's true, whose fault was that? If that's true, to whom does that fault belong? You tell me. Who is responsible for the decision for having non-Levium carry the look after the R?
David?
David, I agree with Phyllis. It's David.
I would assume so. I would assume so. At some point, some level of accountability belongs to a much broader canvas. David, the leadership, the people. This wasn't an arbitrary decision. Uzzah and Achio jumped into the Aron and said, oh, we're not Levium, we're going to do it anyway. This was all part of the celebration, part of a calculated decision. We're going to move the Aron. House of Nadav have been responsible for it up until now. You continue to be responsible for it. And Uzzah and Achio carried in the wagon. They even sang a song about Uzzah and Achio. Remember the song? It's here on the bottom. They carried the ark on a new wagon. They carried it in the house of Abinadab on the hill. Uzzah and Achio's sons of Abinadab were driving the wagon. And they carried it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Achio b'nei Abinadab were driving the wagon together with the Aron, and Achio was before the Aron, and Uzzah was inside. We looked at these psukim last week. This is a shira, beautiful shira, about how Uzzah and Achio, sons of Abinadab, would drive this new wagon carrying the ark. And you're telling me that they shouldn't have been there in the first place? Because nobody has the right to touch the ark except Kohen. And to prove his point, the Radak quotes a pasuk in Divrei Yamim. I'll show you this pasukim in a second. We'll just finish the Radak. V'chein hitvada David chet ze. So we've identified the fact that the core source of this chet belongs to the leadership because it was a decision mistake. If the decision mistake, the person who perpetrates the act is responsible on some level, ein shliach l'dvar avera. But on the other hand, there is a level of accountability that goes all the way up the echelons of command and up to David. And so the mistake was actually admitted to by David himself. And we're going to look at these psukim. David says the second time when they bring the Aron to Yerushalayim, makes the observation that you are not responsible for the breach of God, rather it is we, for we did not properly seek or properly address the Aron. What that means is a mystery, and we need to look at the psukim. So I have the psukim down here on the source page. What I'm going to do, however, is jump to Divrei Yamim so you can see it in context with the translation. So we're going to open up these psukim in Divrei Yamim Aleph, Perek Tetvav. Starting with Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayikra David l'tzadoku l'Evyatar ha-Kohanim. David calls over Tzadok and Abiatar. Tzadok and Abiatar, two Kohanim that will be with David his entire story. We'll see them over and over again in Sefer Shmuel. Tzadok and Abiatar. Vil Leviim Luriel Asayav Yoel Shmaya Liav Aminadav. And to the house of the Leviim that we just mentioned about. So he calls over a group of people, both Kohanim and Leviim. And he says to them, Vayom Alehem, Atem Rashei Ha'avot Leviim. You are the leaders of the house of the tribe of the Leviim. Hitkadishu Atem Achechem. Prepare yourselves, sanctify yourselves, purify yourselves, you and your brethren. Va'alitem et Aron Hashem Elokei Yisrael El Hachinoti Lo. And bring the ark to the place that I have prepared for it. This is the second time. This is the Divrei Hayamim account of the second arrival of the Aron in Yerushalayim. Ki lemibari shana lo atem parat Hashem Elokeinu banu. Ki lemibari shana lo atem. Because the first time when we took it to Yerushalayim, or tried to bring it with Uzzah, lo atem, you were not the ones to carry it. And because you were not the ones to carry it, Peretz Hashem Elokeinu banu, God made a breach upon us. That's Peretz Uzzah, that's the story. Ki lo drashnu kamishpat, for we did not seek it according to the ordinance. We did not seek the ark properly, according to the law of the Torah. What mistake is David correcting here? Right, the mistake that the Radak just
finished. Who's supposed to bring the Aron?
Right, that's the mistake that the Radak just identified, namely that it was supposed to be brought by Kohanim and Levim, not by other members of other tribes. So in fact, Vayitkachu Kohanim Levim Valot Et Aron Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Vayisu Bnei Levim Et Aron Elokim, the children of the Levim then went and carried the ark, Kasher Tziva Moshe Kedvar Hashem, in accordance with the law that Moshe had commanded them. This time they did it right, namely, Biktefam Bamotot Alehem, on their shoulders with the staff, that the bars that would hold the ark. And then David appoints the different people to sing, and the rest of it is the rest of the story. I'm not going to go into that right now. But what's interesting about this description, I'm going to go back to my source page for a second. What's interesting about this description is that whereas the Radak picks up on one piece of the story, namely that the Aron was to be carried by Levim, Bnei Levi, Bnei Kohanim. In fact, in Divrei Hayamim, there is a different part of the story that's emphasized, or an additional part of the story that's emphasized, namely, not just who would carry the Aron, but there was another mistake made.
How they were carrying it.
Namely?
That it shouldn't be on the Agalah, it should be carried on their shoulders.
Correct. We've made a huge, there's a huge emphasis in the story about this wagon, right? Placed it on this new wagon, Agalah Chadasha. And in that song that they sang that I reprinted here at the end of the source page, you can see the phrase Agalah Chadasha appears twice, right? They were very proud of this new wagon they placed the Aron into. But the Torah was very clear that the Aron was not to be transported in a wagon. The Aron was to be carried by katef on your shoulders. And in fact, in the Psukim in Bamidbar, it says very clearly, Veikach Moshe, remember the Bamidbar Perek Zion is the story of the donation of the Nesiim, the donation of the elders of each tribe when they donated wagons. Remember which the reason why Parashat Noso is so long, because it goes through the list of every donation of every tribe. Same donations over and over and over again. But amongst the donations that they made were these big wagons. And Moshe didn't know what to do with them. So God said to him, use the wagons to transport the Mishkan. So in fact, that's exactly what they do. Veikach Moshe et ha'agalot et ha'bakar. Moshe took all these wagons. Veiter otam el ha'levim, and he gave them to the Levim as a kind of a designated purpose. He gave two of the wagons to Bnei Levi Gershon for their job, for the stuff that they had to carry, the wood of the Mishkan and the various components of the Mishkan. Betarba galot the shmanata bakana tanit nemurari kefiratam biadi tamar ben Aaron Kohen. And he gave four of the wagons to Itamar for their job of what they had to carry, whether it was the chatzer and the yiriot and the various pieces of the curtains. The Livnei Kahat Lonatan. Kahat was tasked with the job of carrying the kelim of the Mishkan. And they did not get any wagons. Why not? Ki avadata kodesh alehem, because their job was to carry the holy kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, but katef yisau, and they had to carry it on their shoulders. And if that's the case, then David made two mistakes. Now that points to one, but there are in fact two. Because on the one hand, by putting Achio and Uzzah in charge of the transportation, he's designated non-Levian. But at the same time, the moment you designate non-Levian, that leads to another mistake, which is that the non-Levian can't carry the Aron, because they're not allowed to. Only the Kohanim or the Levian can carry the Aron, and they carry it on their shoulders. So Uzzah and Achio, they can't carry the Aron because they're not Levian. So what do? They put the Aron on a wagon. Okay, so now it's on a wagon, and now it's susceptible to fall. Had it been carried by the Levium, it wouldn't have been susceptible to falling. So one mistake leads to another. You gave it to non-Levium, they had to put it on a wagon because they can't carry it, but you're not allowed to carry it on a wagon, you have to carry it on their shoulders, bakatef yourself. So in fact, two fundamental mistakes that were made at this moment. One, that they were carried by non-Levium, or transported by non-Levium, and two, that because of that, was transported on a wagon rather than carried on their shoulders, which should have been much more dignified for the Aron to be carried on a on their shoulders. Gitti, look, you have a question. You got to unmute yourself. Yeah.
I did, I think. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Wouldn't you think that somebody carrying something on their shoulders would more likely stumble than something placed on a flat bed? It doesn't logically.
No, actually, I think not. Because if you're carrying it, remember, you're talking about not clear how many people would carry it, but let's assume there's at least eight people carrying the Aron, right? On each hand. It's a box with two big staffs running through it, two on each end. At least eight people. I'm not quite sure exactly how many. Right, but it's certainly and they're all walking slowly, methodically. Not a couple of oxen carrying a wagon. You know, you whip the ox a little bit too fast, and the stumbles over a rock, and the Aron goes flying. I think the physics of it are different.
So I'm wondering why. He's the only one being punished for this. It's not possible that this was a decision that one person made on their own.
Correct. So what is unquestionably, right? This is a decision that goes all the way up the chain to David, which is why David is the one who admits it and acknowledges it and has to make a mistake, etc. And we'll see where we go from here. Unfortunately, it is not uncommon for mistakes to end up getting made, but the person who pays the price is the person who stands at the end of the chain of that mistake, right? That's exactly the story of, for example, of Achan. Remember, way back when we looked at Sefer Yehoshua, we saw a similar circumstance where the Achan had taken from the spoils of Yericho, and he was punished for it. But the mistake wasn't just Achan's, the mistake was all of Israel's, because the arrogance with which they approached the Battle of Ai was such that in the aftermath of the Battle of Yericho, they all felt that they could do no wrong. And so there was a broader atmosphere that led to a series of mistakes. But the one who actually perpetrates the crime is the one who's going to pay the price. That's the way it works, unfortunately. So Uzzah is the one who actually sort of, and again, that's sort of analogous to the story of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu are victims of the circumstance of the celebration of the moment in which God's revelation would appear and they'd see the Shekhinah, etc. And there was a whole celebration going on, and they ended up in the wrong place at the wrong time. I often use the pun, they're caught in the crossfire, literally, because the Eish that came out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim to consume the altar on the Mizbeach, they were standing in between and they got consumed by it. Should they have been there? No. They were there because they were probably dancing together with everybody else and celebrating it with everybody else. And they were caught up in the energy of the moment. But they're the ones who paid the price. To an extent, it explains, though, why, after the tragedy hits, David's reaction is not to say, oh, Uzzah did something terribly wrong. Right? If you go back to the story, God is angry at Uzzah and he smote him there, and he died. David, God was displeased. David was displeased because God had broken forth against Uzzah. And David was very upset by this. He calls it Peretz Uzzah as if to almost blame God. He took your wrath out on Uzzah, poor guy. What did he do wrong? Stopped, contemplated a little bit, took a step back. Vayira David et Hashem, turned his anger into a little bit more reverence and contemplation and fear of God at that time, and realized that the consequences here mean that the Aron has to stop. We've got to retool and rethink this whole experience. Ech yavoy le'Aron Hashem. In other words, if it had been just Uzzah's fault, then the solution would have been to simply replace Uzzah with a Levi and continue along the journey. But what David realizes is that the problem's much more extensive than just Uzzah's fault. Uzzah paid the price, but he's sort of the tip of the iceberg, more of unfortunately, the scapegoat for a much broader problem that David realizes. And that they have made a series of terrible mistakes by putting the Aron on a wagon, by designating the house of Abinadab to continue this the journey. Why those mistakes are so terrible, we'll see in a second. But I think there's still an even bigger mistake that the Radak is not hit on, that the Psukim and Devayamim hint to, but I think there's still an even bigger mistake. And these things don't happen in a vacuum. How does it come to be that even up the echelons of David himself, they could make such a strategic error as to think that they could place the Aron in a wagon like the Plishtim did? Right? A Galach Hadasha, the last time the Aron was transported on a Galach Hadasha was from Eretz Plishtim. How could they make a mistake of thinking that they could place the Aron in a wagon and business as usual? It's like one mistake and not Levium, just the Israelites. Okay, so it was a mistake, but how did they get to that? So I actually think that the problem is more extensive. And it may be that where the problem begins is in the celebration. Because what you have in this moment when they're bringing the Aron from Kiryat Yarim to Yerushalayim is such an extraordinary moment in history that the celebration here goes off the charts. Come back to this pasuk Hey for a second, before the story of Uzzah. V'David v'chol Beit Yisrael misachakim lifnei Hashem b'chol atzei v'oshim b'kinorot b'nevalim b'tupim b'v'na'anim v'tzaltzalim. Remember Shirat Hayam when Miriam brought the women out to sing? What does it say she brought them out with? Timbrels and drums, right? Tupim Mucholot. This is a list of harps and psalteries and timbrels and cymbals and all kinds of musical instruments. And David is misachakim, right? He's not just dancing. He is dancing with a kind of sachek, to play. Yeah, the term to celebrate, the term lesachek, to use in a context of celebration, it's not a compliment. When it says by cheta ego, I believe, I think the same word appears in cheta ego, that they were, that they, quick glance over to Cheta Ego. Here. So it's almost, it says Letzachek. But it's the same concept. Ve'yashkimim imachrat ve'ilu olot ve'yigishu shlamim. Celebration before the ego, before the golden calf. Olot u'shlamim, same offerings. Vayesh v'am lechob v'shatot, to eat and to drink. Vayakumu l'tzachek. And they got up to l'tzachek, to play, to laugh, to celebrate. But it's an unbridled celebration that is never used in a positive context. And you're talking about, you know, simcha lifnei Hashem, rejoice before God, but not l'sachek lifnei Hashem, or l'sachek lifnei Hashem. That's very different. And the phrase here, v'David b'chobet yisrael misachakim, this joy, this celebration that is extraordinary, that is playing before God, that just leads to an atmosphere that is totally inappropriate. Later in round two, when David brings the Aron back to Yerushalayim, it also says mechaker b'cholos, that he was dancing before God with all his might. But lechaker b'cholos is different. Right? It doesn't have the phrase l'sachek, right? L'sachek is a much more pejorative type of celebration. As if to say, God, Tanakh was not happy with the way that they brought the orchestra out and they were celebrating and they were dancing and there was just unbridled, uncontrolled celebration in the streets. Chazal picked this up, and I'll show you in a medrash that understand it against the backdrop of this phrase, l'sachek, and all of these musical instruments that are here, kinarot, nevalim, tupim, nanim, and tzeltzalim, sort of the largest collection of musical instruments used in any one place. Chazal here in the Gemara and Sota, again, in the same context, why was God angry? Why was David punished? Now, David wasn't punished. Uzzah was punished. But you understand that there's a broader context here that brings the chait all the way up to David, right? David was the one who was bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and now David, in public, is stuck. Yes, Phyllis, you are correct. The term has sexual overtones when Yitzchak is described as a misachek with Rivka. I wasn't quite convinced that the connotation matches that level of the pejorative here, but you are correct that that is a concern with this word. Mipneman nenash David. Why was David punished? In public, embarrassed, Aaron can't come to Yerushalayim now, the whole celebration gets stopped. So Gemara says, because he calls the words of Torah song. As it says, the words of your law were to me like song. Right? Of which the Torah speaks about in such heavy terms that they have to, they have to burden your eyes. They have to, you have to literally live them and see them and read them and understand them. And you want to look at them like casual songs? I will cause you to stumble in something that everybody, every child knows, namely, that the Aron has to be carried on the shoulders. And you brought it with an agala, with a wagon. So clearly the Gemara blames the decision to put the Aron on a wagon on David, even though David seems to have nothing to do with that decision, but links it back to the Zmirot. Now, it's not the Zmirot that's the problem. It's the celebration. It's the sense of the joy, the simcha, that's not described as simcha lifnei Hashem, but l'sachek lifnei Hashem. And that kind of unbridled celebration, right? Celebration is positive. Joy, singing is a positive, but in a context, right? In a context, Shira in a context of and Zmirot in a context. But this l'sachek lifnei Hashem b'chol atzev v'oshim, this does not bode well. And I'll show you, it's an interesting pattern, because it's not the first time. In the story of Beit Shemesh, when the Aron came to Beit Shemesh and they opened it and they brought offerings, they all kinds of mistakes they made in Beit Shemesh, but thousands paid the price for it. The pasuk in the story of Beit Shemesh, which is Shmuel Aleph Perek Vav, says, Beit Shemesh kotzim tzir chitim ba'emek v'yisu et enehem v'yiru et ha'aron. The people there saw the Aron, v'yismechu lirot, and they rejoice. Now there it does say simcha, but nonetheless, Rashi there makes the comment, ha'im istaklin hechu balavado, they looked up, they saw the Aron in a wagon coming by itself, u'misimchatam na'agu bo kalut rosh. Their joy led them to a kind of frivolity that was inappropriate. It says, they opened the Aron. They opened it up. They're like, hey, look at this. Look at the Luchas. Hey, he sold it up. Everybody see. Right? The celebration there was so uncontrolled that they lost all sense of reverence and honor. And that's exactly what, at least according to one interpretation, was the problem that happened to Nadav and Aviv. Pasuk says, by Nadav and Avihu, v'yichu b'nei Aron Nadav v'Avihu ish machtato, v'etnu behen esh, v'yisimu lehem ktoret, v'yakivu lifnei Hashem esh zera shelo tziva otam. They placed into this frying pan foreign offering, foreign fire that was not commanded of them. V'tetze esh lifnei Hashem v'tochal otam v'yemutu lifnei Hashem. And the fire came out and consumed them. Says the Sifra, they also, in their joy, when they saw this new offering and a new experience, they wanted to add one expression of love on another. They just wanted to add to it in the celebration. And at the end of the day, no celebration can ever be unbridled. That's the famous contradiction in Kohelet. When one hand, one pasuk says, Mishibachti ani tasimcha, praised celebration and joy. And the other pasuk says, "Ulasimcha mazal asa." What does celebration get me? And Chazal say, one is simcha shel mitzvah, one is not. Right? Simcha shel, and one is simcha shel hololu. Simcha has to be in context, has to be framed, has to be put into a proper context. And that's exactly what they lost perspective of in the story of Nadav and Avihu. They lost perspective of in the story of Beit Shemesh. And that, says the Gemara, I think it's based on this pasuk hey, was, which is the prelude to the story of Uzzah, is where they lost perspective of that in the story of David as well. That simchas l'sachek lifnei Hashem doesn't bode well. The atmosphere is too energized for the kind of reverence and critical thinking and honor and kavod that belongs to the Aron. And to a very large extent, I'm going to use an analogy here you may not like, but it's one of the things that about Simchas Torah that always concerns me. Because Simchas Torah has that quality. If you let Simchas Torah get away from us, and it's not hard to do that with the amount of alcohol that goes flying in Simchas Torah, then you turn Simchas Torah into exactly this. L'sachek lifnei Hashem, where Simchas Torah is supposed to be Simchat Torah, the celebration and the joy of Torah, there's a very fine line between a celebration with the Torah and a kind of unbridled drunkenness that allows people to do all kinds of things they'd never get away with doing in any other context. And that's precisely what I think happened here. And I'm going to end this year today with one interesting analogy. If we've drawn the link between Nadav and Avihu, Beit Shemesh, and Uzzah and Achyo, or Uzzah, then I'll draw one more link. Because Uzzah and Achyo are the sons of?
Elazar.
No, Uzzah and Achyo are the sons of?
Avinadav.
Avinadav. Vayakivu et Aron Elokim el Agala Chadasha vayisu mibet Avinadav. Uzzah v'Achyo b'nei Avinadav nogim et Agala Chadasha. Vayisu mibet Avinadav asher b'giva. Im Aron Elokim v'Achyo olech lifnei ha'Aron. This Avinadav plays a very large role here. He's not in the story. He's not in the story. Uzzah and Achyo are the ones in the story. They're the sons of Avinadav. How come there's so much emphasis on Avinadav? So this is not conscious, this is subconscious. So the Medrash points out that Avinadav is a contraction of two names. Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu. And the problem comes full circle. And now, we still have a lot of work to figure out because I'm still not satisfied. Because I'm still concerned with the level of the chet and the... Actually, I need to close this. I'm still concerned with the level of the chet and whether or not there's something bigger, still, even, than just the celebration and the atmosphere that led to a decision to place the Aron on a wagon led by B'nei Avinadav. We will explore what that is, Bezrat Hashem, over the next 2 weeks, but we will look first at what David does to rectify the situation when he brings the Aron back the second time, and then we'll explore the deeper side of this story as well. So that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the shir. And
very much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. See you, Bezrat Hashem, next week.
Thank you so much.
I had the same thoughts about Simchas Torah before you mentioned it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, Joyce.
Yes.